Welcome. We're so thrilled to have you joining us today for a very special custom-tailored deep dive.
Yes, really glad you're here with us.
Usually, when you send us your source materials, whether that's a dense stack of academic research or maybe a collection of your own personal notes, our mission is to sift through the noise. We try to extract the core arguments and present you with the most crucial nuggets of
We're
knowledge.
always looking for the story within the data.
Exactly. But today's deep dive is, it's unlike anything we have ever tackled before. I have to admit, when I first opened the file you sent over, I actually thought my computer was broken.
Oh, I had the exact same reaction.
Right. I genuinely kept hitting refresh, just waiting for the actual depth dive material to load, because the source material you provided is completely, I mean, entirely devoid of traditional text.
It really is a fascinating artifact.
It's just a highly unique, bizarrely minimal document, simply titled Pasted Text. And when I say devoid of traditional text, I mean there are no paragraphs, no arguments, no quotes. It consists entirely of a sequence of structural markers.
Yeah, and when I first looked at what you sent us, I really appreciated the puzzle of it. It takes a very specific analytical mindset to look at a document stripped of its visible content and recognize that there is still a structural framework worth examining.
Definitely.
Even without the underlying visual data, the actual images themselves, the skeleton that is left behind, tells us quite a bit about how information is organized. What we're looking at is essentially the architectural blueprint of a thought process preserved by accident. It's an exercise in digital archaeology.
Okay, let's unpack this. What we have in this document under the title Pasted Text are exactly six raw components,
Just six.
right? Six image placeholders, and they are laid out in a very specific, deliberate order. The document literally just reads bracket, image placeholder one, close bracket.
Followed immediately by the next one.
Yeah, image placeholder two, then image placeholder three, followed by a line break, and then image placeholder four, image placeholder five, and image placeholder six. That is the entirety of the source. There is literally no other context provided.
And that minimalist framework is precisely why it is an interesting case study. By removing the specific details of whatever those images were, we are forced to engage purely with the structure of the data.
Right, because there's nothing else to look at.
Exactly. We are looking at the foundational architecture of information delivery.
So let's start right at the beginning. Part one of our journey into this document, the origin and the opening sequence. Let's talk about that title you provided, Pasted Text.
It's a very utilitarian system-generated phrase.
It is. It immediately tells us how this document came to be in its current state.
It does. The term pasted indicates that we are looking at the result of a transfer. Information was lifted from one environment and deposited into another.
Like copying from a web page into an email or something.
Precisely. In modern digital ecosystems, when you move complex, rich text information across different platforms or through incompatible APIs, you frequently encounter these kinds of rendering failures.
The rich media just doesn't make it across.
Right. The actual photographs, charts, or illustrations, they fail to translate across the clipboard protocol. The organic matter of the content dissolves during the transfer, leaving only these programmatic image markers behind.
It's like you said earlier, a digital fossil.
It is, quite literally. The content has decayed, but the exact shape and sequence of the original organism remain perfectly preserved in the code.
That concept of data decay is really compelling. We usually think of digital information as permanent, but it is highly subject to its environment. So let's look at the first part of that digital fossil, the opening
The
sequence.
first three markers.
Yeah, the document begins immediately. There's no introduction, no text, no preamble. It just starts with a triad of data points. They appear exactly like this image placeholder one, immediately followed on the next line by image placeholder two, and then directly below that, image placeholder three.
What's fascinating here is the sheer visual dominance of that opening strategy. Think about the intent behind structuring a digital document this way.
They're hitting you with it right out of the gate.
Exactly. There is no text to guide the viewer, no introductory paragraph to set the stage, no headline to provide context. Starting with three consecutive visual elements indicates a highly immersive, immediate user experience.
It's a total show, don't tell strategy.
Yes. The creator of the original document didn't want the audience reading abstract concepts. They wanted them processing visual data the second the page loaded.
It reminds me of modern web design trends, specifically what UI designers call the hero section of a landing page.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
You just don't get a wall of text anymore when you visit a site. You get a carousel of high-impact visuals right above the fold. And the numerical progression here, 1, 2, and 3, shows that this wasn't just a mood board.
Right, they aren't random.
Exactly. These images were sequential. They were meant to be processed in a specific order. It's a steady buildup.
The sequential nature is key. The numbers 1, 2, and 3 suggest a chronological or hierarchical dependency. The viewer is being taken on a guided journey. But what I find even more interesting is the grouping itself.
The fact that there are three of them.
Yes. Why three? In cognitive psychology and information architecture, the rule of three is a foundational principle.
Because our brains like patterns.
Exactly. The human brain is essentially a pattern recognition machine, and three is the smallest number of elements required to create a pattern.
That makes total sense. We see it everywhere in communication.
We do. And it goes back much further than web design. If we look at art history, this structure mimics the classic triptych.
Oh, like those old altar pieces.
Yes, a work of art divided into three sections or carved panels that are hinged together. In a triptych, the left, center, and right panels work together to tell a cohesive narrative, often moving through time.
So the author was tapping into something really primal there.
By stacking these three image placeholders right at the top, the original author was leveraging a very old, very deeply ingrained human preference for processing information in clusters of three. It allows the viewer to establish a pattern, predict a trajectory, and feel a sense of narrative completion without being overwhelmed by data.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Aren't we just looking at a broken web page?
It's a fair point to raise.
How do we know this 3-in-3 structure isn't just a coincidence of a buggy copy-paste job? Maybe the original document had text in between these images, and the text just didn't copy over, leaving us with this illusion of a perfectly clustered triptych.
That is a very fair critique, and as digital archaeologists in this scenario, we have to consider the limitations of our artifact. It is entirely possible that text was lost in the transfer.
It happens all the time.
It does. However, even if text was originally present, the sequential numbering of the image files themselves, 1, 2, 3, in rapid succession before a structural break, suggests that the visual assets were grouped intentionally in the source code.
The file names wouldn't be sequentially clustered like that if they were scattered randomly throughout a massive article.
Exactly. The architecture still points to a deliberate clustering of visual data. And that brings us to the most deliberate architectural choice in the entire document.
Right, which brings us to the second part of our deep dive, the structural pivot. Because immediately following image placeholder 3, there is a distinct shift.
The line break?
Yes, we get a paragraph break, an empty line, a literal space between the first triad and the sequence that follows. If this were just a random data dump, you'd expect a continuous list, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But that empty line breaks the list into two distinct halves.
And we cannot overlook the importance of that space. In the study of information architecture, the absence of data is just as communicative as the data itself.
The space is saying something.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is about the gestalt principles of visual perception, specifically the law of proximity.
Okay, remind us what that means in this context.
This psychological principle states that objects that are near or proximate to each other tend to be grouped together by the human brain. By inserting a literal gap, a line break, the author is manipulating our cognitive load.
Meaning they are forcing our brains to categorize the first three images as group A and whatever comes next as a completely separate entity.
Precisely. It is a cognitive boundary. UI and UX designers utilize negative space or white space to organize information hierarchically.
It's like taking a breath between sentences.
Or chapters in a book, yes. When a user is presented with complex visual data, working memory begins to fill up. According to Miller's Law in Psychology, the average person can only keep about 7 items in their working memory at once.
So dropping 6 complex images in a row might just overwhelm them.
Exactly. By breaking the 6 images down into 2 clusters of 3, separated by a physical boundary, the creator reduces the cognitive strain. The space tells the brain, process this first cluster, store it. Now reset your working memory for the next cluster.
It makes the pause just as vital as the placeholders themselves. It is entirely about grouping information logically. You see that break, and you subconsciously know that whatever comes next is going to be a response, a continuation, or a reaction to the first group.
The formatting acts as a silent traffic cop for your brain.
I love that analogy. which leads us perfectly into the final part of this document, the symmetrical conclusion. After we cross that empty space, we are introduced to the second half of the source text. And it reads, image placeholder 4, image placeholder 5, and finally the concluding image placeholder 6.
The completion of the secondary sequence.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Look at the mathematics of this entire layout. It is flawlessly balanced.
It really is.
You have exactly 3 image placeholders. Then you have a deliberate structural boundary.
Right.
And then you have exactly 3 more image placeholders. It is perfect mathematical symmetry. It's a mirror image.
Right.
The back half perfectly reflects the footprint of the front half.
The symmetry is arguably the most revealing aspect of this source material. Humans are naturally drawn to symmetrical patterns. We seek them out in our environment because symmetry typically signals stability, health, or order.
We trust things that are balanced.
We do. When we see rigid symmetry in information structure, it implies a highly engineered comparative framework. This raises an important question for you, the listener, to consider. What does a rigid 3-in-3 structure actually imply about the missing content? How does this specific framework dictate the kind of argument that was being made?
Well, when you balance 2 identical clusters of data against each other, separated by a clear boundary, you are naturally prompting the viewer to compare them.
Absolutely.
It immediately makes me think of an A-B test, or maybe a split narrative, a before and after scenario.
That is exactly the kind of framework this structure suggests. Let's explore some hypotheticals of what this digital skeleton might have originally supported. In a scientific or academic context, a 3-in-3 structure often represents the transition from methodology to results.
Oh, interesting. Walk us through that.
Well, the first triad images 1, 2, and 3 might represent the control group, the variable, and the application of the experiment.
The setup.
Right. Then the physical line break serves as the passage of time or the catalyst. And the second triad images 4, 5, and 6 represents the data, the observation, and the final conclusion.
So the symmetry ensures the viewer understands that the results correlate directly to the initial setup. I can easily see that. It maps perfectly to a scientific paper's visual layout.
It's very rigorous.
But let's look at it from a completely different angle. What if this was a commercial document? What if this was a marketing pitch deck or a sales funnel that got copied and pasted into a plain text email?
In a commercial context, symmetry is often used to map pain points to solutions. The opening triad could be visually establishing the problem the consumer is facing.
So image 1 is the frustration.
Image 2 is the wasted time.
And image 3 is the financial cost.
Exactly. The cognitive break allows the consumer to internalize that pain. Then the second triad introduces the product. Image 4 is the feature that solves the frustration. Image 5 is the time saved. And image 6 is the ROI.
The return on investment. That makes so much sense. The structure itself does the heavy lifting of persuasion by ensuring every negative aspect introduced in the first half is perfectly counterbalanced by a positive aspect in the second half.
The structure guarantees that no problem is left unsolved. It creates a psychological sense of completion for the buyer.
But there's another possibility here, too. What if the missing images weren't data or products? What if they were entirely conceptual? We could be looking at a dialectic approach to an argument.
A dialectic approach is a very strong possibility for this kind of mirrored architecture. In a dialectic argument, you present a thesis followed by an antithesis with the goal of arriving at a synthesis.
Setting up 2 opposing forces.
Right. Here, the first 3 images might present a specific worldview, a historical trend, or a distinct political or social thesis. The space in the middle provides a moment of reflection.
A chance to digest that worldview before the pivot.
Exactly. The final 3 images then present the exact opposite, the antithesis, a counterargument, or an opposing perspective.
And because the structure is so perfectly balanced, 3 images versus 3 images, it affords equal visual weight to both sides of the argument.
It's inherently fair, visually speaking.
The author isn't letting one idea visually dominate the other. They are setting them up as distinct, equal clusters to be evaluated by the viewer.
Exactly. And in that dialectic scenario, the synthesis, the resolution of these 2 opposing ideas isn't actually on the page.
Wait, really?
The synthesis is what happens in the viewer's mind after processing the 2 perfectly balanced halves. The structure forces the audience to become an active participant in resolving the tension between the top triad and the bottom triad.
That is a fascinating way to look at it. The blank space, the line break in the middle, isn't just a formatting choice. It's the arena where the 2 ideas actually collide.
It's where the thinking happens.
It is genuinely intriguing when you step back and look at it through the lens of information architecture. We started with what appeared to be a completely broken document. just 6 formatting errors, essentially. Image placeholder 1 through image placeholder 6. A simple piece of pasted text.
The digital fossil.
Exactly. But by analyzing the scaffolding, the principles of proximity, the sequence, and that rigid symmetry, we've uncovered the mechanics of a highly structured visual comparison.
It speaks to the durability of underlying frameworks. The content itself, the specific context, the actual photographs or charts, fail to survive the digital transfer. But the intent behind the layout remains entirely legible.
It really highlights how much the format matters.
It reminds us that content is only one half of communication. The container that holds the content dictates how we process and understand the message.
So what does this all mean? As we bring this custom deep dive to a close, let's reflect on the journey we just took. We started with a seemingly empty digital fossil provided by you 6 identical, perfectly balanced image markers divided right down the middle by a formatting break.
Completely devoid of its original context.
Right. But through our analysis, applying concepts like Gestalt psychology, triptych structures, and comparative frameworks, we've explored how this structural skeleton reveals the underlying mechanics of visual organization.
And I think there's a practical takeaway here for you, as someone navigating an increasingly complex digital landscape.
Absolutely.
We live in an era of unprecedented information density. We are constantly bombarded with rich media, high-definition videos, endless scrolling interfaces, and aggressive visual marketing. Sometimes the sheer volume of the data, the flashiness of the content, obscures the actual argument being made or the psychological levers being pulled.
A medium becomes a distraction.
It does. What this stripped-down document demonstrates is that sometimes the best way to understand how a message is being engineered is to look past the content entirely.
To look at the framework.
If you can identify the underlying structure, how the information is sequenced, where the boundaries are placed to manage your cognitive load, and how opposing ideas are balanced against each other, you can see the machinery of persuasion at work.
That's a powerful tool.
Being well-informed isn't just about absorbing what is being shown to you. It's about recognizing how the architecture of that information is designed to guide your conclusions.
That is such a vital perspective. It's about seeing the wireframe behind the finished website, so to speak. Understanding the blueprint helps you understand the building.
Perfectly said.
And that leaves us with a fascinating final thought for today. We've spent all this time analyzing the empty vessels of someone else's decayed digital narrative, exploring how a simple 3-in-3 structure forces comparison and resolution.
The before and after, the problem and solution.
Exactly. But what about your own framework? If you had to fill those 6 perfectly balanced sequential blank spaces with the most important visual story of your own life, 3 images representing your foundation, a vital defining boundary, and 3 images representing your trajectory forward, what would that narrative look like? And more importantly, how would that structure change the way someone else understood your story? Thank you so much for bringing us this incredibly unique puzzle and for joining us on this deep dive.